I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for choosing this KAXE-KBXE conversation. We are member-supported radio, a National Public Radio affiliate in northern Minnesota. We need your support for our radio broadcasts, our online content, and our podcast. Go to KAXE.org, and thanks for listening. You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton. I'm here with Aaron Brown and Chuck Marone. We are recording the night that we would have been getting ready right now to ask questions of the candidates for
governor. I would have dressed up.
Yeah, me too. I had a little bit. I wasn't going to try to dress like you guys, but we were going to be professional. We had it all set. But let's talk about some of the things, because we did really think through and want to ask them some really meaty questions that have to do with life in rural Minnesota. I wonder first, because I don't know how often they're going to be asked about local government aid, but I wonder first, let's talk about what that actually is and what that means, because that may not be, I don't necessarily understand it completely, and why is it important?
In the 1970s, the state of Minnesota, as part of what was called at the time and subsequently the Minnesota Miracle, changed the tax codes to essentially eliminate almost all taxing flexibility for local governments. They said you can't charge that fee anymore, you can't charge that tax anymore. Before that time, every city had a different local tax policy. Which makes some sense, because if you're an Iron Range town, you've got a way different like economy than if you're the Twin Cities metro area, than if you're Southern Minnesota farming area, than if you're Brainerd tourism area. Nope, everybody's got the same now. So we all have the same tax structure. But part of the payback for that was that the state said, we will collect the money now. We'll have a state sales tax. We'll have a statewide, you know, the property tax will get collected, it will get distributed back, and we will give cities, particularly cities that tended to be older and have more fixed costs and were kind of regional centers, we're going to give you local government aid. We're going to give you we're going to send you money every year so that you can have a fire department and a police department and all the things that everybody needs. And in the 70s, when cities were growing, when we were growing like gangbusters and we didn't have that much debt and, you know, we didn't have pensions due and all, you know, the world looked rosy. These were like easy promises to make at the state level. Today, not so much. And one of the ramifications of this, too, is that we sit here today. And as I mentioned in the last segment, we have cities that are wholly dependent on local government aid now. I haven't looked at the stats specifically for a while, but like the city of Chisholm. And not to rag on them, but they're just one that comes to mind. The last time I looked, it was like 80% of their budget was local government aid, just like money from the state. In 2008 and 2010, when we had budget problems at the state level, there was proposals to eliminate local government aid. And it was kind of coming from the conservative side until the conservatives stepped back and realized like this means wiping out whole bunches of rural cities. So the question I wanted to ask these gubernatorial candidates is, does it keep you up at night? Like, does it bother you that a whole bunch of cities in our listening area, in our region, a whole bunch of cities, Representative Walz, in your district are wholly dependent on local government aid, like need this money every year or they go out of business? And by go out of business, like they can't provide basic services, can't do this. Does that give you any degree of like, unsettlement? Because when you look at the state budget, it's probably the most tenuous part of it. You know, the state, when they get into tough times, are they going to cut education? Are they going to cut prisons? Where are they going to cut? Local government aid is always the thing like first put on the chopping block. Do you see a problem with that?
The note I would make on the history, Governor Wendell Anderson was the original architect of the what's called the Minnesota Miracle. Obviously, it wasn't called that by the IRs of the time, the independent Republicans. The premise behind it, and it was certainly something that Iron Range Governor Rudy Perpich, I say Iron Range, he's from the Iron Range, but the Iron Range's only governor was lieutenant governor at the time and was part of the story too when he was in the state Senate. The Minnesota Miracle was designed to make equal opportunities for people who live in small towns. And it was a holistic approach. It was the city funding that Chuck mentioned, but it was also the schools. And the idea was, the fundamental concept was, if you're a kid born in in Chisholm, for instance, you're going to have access to the same opportunities as a kid born in a wealthy suburb or an urban area or some other small town. And it was a way of equalizing the fact that some towns don't have the tax base. They don't have the taxable income. And certainly on the Iron Range, and these are the areas I'm more familiar with, you know, after the Taconite Amendment and the Taconite tax system changed the way Iron Range towns collected the bulk of their property tax wealth. A lot of Chisholm's numbers are the fact that they're dependent on local government aid and mining. They're not taxing that money out of their, you know, 100-year-old residential homes or decaying downtown businesses. They're getting their money out of the mines, and they're getting their money out of local government aid. And more of the reason is that there was this goal of making an equal system. What's happened since, I'll just absolve blaming anybody. The problem is we have a stymied system. It started in the 80s and it's continued. When you campaign against taxes, as Republicans have, too much taxes, and that we should pay less, that makes the discussion about what you're going to cut. What aren't we going to do? What's going to go away? And that's, I think, been the framing, at least in my adult life. Even, you know, I got involved in politics when I was 16 because they were cutting stuff at my school. On the range and in small towns, rural areas, that's been the discussion. What are we cutting? And yes, local government aid, because it's not well understood, because it's part of a larger reform of now 40 years ago that has been nipped at and picked at and changed. And of course, the economy has changed and places have changed. Instead of modifying and updating that system based on the goal of equality of opportunity among places, we've now made it just one of a thousand other things that we argue about endlessly, or that wants money and funding, and that will periodically be cut when it's possible to cut it. And what I'm getting at, though, is that it's all part of the same gridlock system, the same gridlock that's, you know, made it so that higher education doesn't know how much money it's going to get. The transportation and roads, maybe you get it, maybe you don't. It tends to be more popular now, but we see these things happening because of political gridlock and an inability to have both parties united around that goal. So it's kind of like watching a fungus grow on the side of a barn or something. It's just something that grew there. What we have now, it grew there because we weren't modifying the structure, and it's just what we got. And so I would have loved to have known what they said and how they responded. I think they both know that issue and would have come at it from different angles. But as a Hennepin County Commissioner, Jeff Johnson, is an area that wouldn't benefit as much from local government aid. It's how are we going to tax for these towns? And I know, Chuck, you've always kind of pushed this idea of local control and get back to a local taxation system. And I'm contractually bound to mention my research on early Hibbing and the fact that property taxes on the mines were what built that town. And the local control was a huge issue. Vic Power went to St. Paul to argue against state interference in the property tax system. And he would have been against the local government aid on those grounds. But what happened is after the Taconite Amendment neutered all of that mining money and put it towards a formula, the thought was, well, let's make a grand formula that helps and protects all these towns. Is it the best thing for the future? For a lot of towns, I don't know what the alternative is, and Chisholm's one of them.
I suspect that Johnson would answer it a little bit different than the history that Aaron gave, which is good. I don't necessarily dispute any of it, except for I think the original goal was a certain level of equality, but I do think that this is like the fundamental liberal conservative like core argument.
Oh, I agree with that.
And the conservative part of this is the argument that it's a illusory trap, like it's a short-term trap. You give the city local government aid, you take away their ability to kind of adapt and change and set their own local policy. You take away that control and you say, we're going to have state control now. And then we'll give you the money so that you can go do these things. And in the short term, like it works out great. We get a little bit more money and da 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 da. But now we're subject to these cuts. And that's what I think the left side of the spectrum tends to look at, is the cuts. On the other side of the spectrum, though, I think we look and say, okay, we got this money And now the person comes in and they want the tax subsidy to build the road out, you know, a mile out of town to connect this. And, you know, we got this money and that's good growth and good jobs. So let's do that. And now 25 years later, we got to come up with money to fix that road. And not only that road, but the pipe and the sidewalk and like all this other stuff in it. And we promised when we had money that we would do this and this and this. And now those look like really bad promises. Like we wish we hadn't done that, but they're forever promises. We can't like stop maintaining the road. So now all of a sudden, because we had this extra money here for this short like burst of time, we've committed ourselves to all kinds of things. We've essentially put ourselves in like a punitive kind of situation where we've got all these promises and no matter what the state does, like we can't keep up with them. That's really not the best use of our money. It's really not the best use of our resources.
It's not even, in some cases, I'll join you on this, it's not even the best thing for the town in question.
No.
Because the town is thinking about growth now. The idea was to give parity to towns that weren't suburbs. But then what the result has been, unintended, I assure you, but the result has been small towns that try to be like suburbs. And for various reasons, A, it's not possible. B, it includes all kinds of investments that small towns probably shouldn't make. Speculative buildings on the edges of towns, you know, lots of pavement where people don't walk. I always drive through Grand Rapids here. There's miles of sidewalks that don't have anything attached to them and sewers underneath them. And that's just all part of the idea that we're going to build and the growth will follow this pattern. Well, if it doesn't, you're just paying for millions of dollars of stuff that you're not even going to use.
You look at like the Twin Stadium and we think of the Twin Stadium or like US Bank Stadium is like massive investments. But you look at it as a percentage of like the city of Minneapolis budget, and I mean, it wasn't overwhelming, but it was a fraction of their budget. You look at projects that you would do in a city like Chisholm or even Grand Rapids or Brainerd. Brainerd just got done last year doing a project that was like 50% more than their annual budget. I mean, imagine that in a place like Minneapolis. Like it doesn't scale right. And so to me, what I would want to like push these candidates to talk about in terms of local government aid is this is very different in our region, the relationship between local governments and the state as kind of the conduit being this aid that flows back and forth. This is a very different relationship than what you have between, say, Minneapolis-St. Paul and the state with local government aid. If you're Minneapolis-St. Paul, local government aid is 4 or 5% of your budget. It's like your extra spending money. You know, I'm not saying they scream loud when they look at cutting it too, but it wouldn't put them out of business. For our cities, it would put them out of business. And that's a disconcerting kind of relationship, right? I mean, I don't think anyone's goal is to have our local cities here like wholly dependent on the state and the nuances of the legislative process to be able to provide basic services like police protection and fire protection, plowing the roads. Yet that's where we're at.
I think the question framed from the liberal side would be, you know, how do we maintain this equality that made a huge difference in a lot of lives in the 70s and 80s? You know, the quality of the range schools was, you know, that I experienced was in part because they survived the 80s and were still good. And so you can quantifiably say that it helped at the time. But how are we in this political environment, in this economic environment, where the population is doing what it's going to do in rural places and towns are this old and they need these things? How are we going to maintain equality in this environment in a way that is, frankly, politically possible? Because, you know, we sit and we wish that the legislature will just become competent and altruistic and bipartisan. And typically, that's just impossible to imagine it happening in an environment where a local candidate is running on stuff he saw on the TV from national news. You know, so they're often la-la land. They're not fixated on these kind of questions. And I would have loved to have seen how Johnson and Walz, I mean, to an extent, I think I know how Johnson might respond, but I would love to know how Walz was going to respond to that.
How do you think Walz would respond? Because, I mean, to me, I sense that he has to understand this problem. Mm-hmm. And really, let me go a step deeper with the problem, because the fundamental problem kind of manifests in local government aid. But a big part of the problem is I was at city council meetings in the last couple decades where everybody on the city council was over 65. And the median age in the city was in the late 50s or early 60s. And like the growth industry was, you know, transition housing for the elderly. And you could look and say, okay, in 20 years, the growth industry will be mortuary services and backhoes in the graveyard. And then like what comes after that? I don't know.
Lawn mowing.
Exactly. So you look and say, okay, our economy has changed and what it means to live in a small town in a rural area has changed. And these places are really, really fragile. What are the policy implications of that? And Walz has served these areas. I mean, it's not like, mm-hmm. it's not like he is not, I think, innately aware of this problem in like a very human way. The communities that he has, you know, gone to Congress and brought home the pork dollars to help build this project or that project, I know him and his staffers look at that and say, like, this does not work. How does he answer that question?
Well, I think any Democrat is looking at this and they don't want to back off this notion. They don't want to give up this core value of equality and the idea that, you know, no matter where you're born, you get an equal access to a good school and a town that has a park and library and amenities. How does a state official say the problem is local governments have chosen the wrong priorities in so many cases? Because you could take all that local government aid money over the years, and if you had applied it to us, maybe smarter choices inside the city, skewing the trends in development and instead focus on long-term sustainable investments in housing and things in your town and say, ah, they would be doing a lot better. But almost none of them did that because it was not cool and it was not considered. All kinds of studies said they shouldn't do it.
Well,
you know,
not only that, but the state came in and said, if you do this other thing, we'll pay for 80% of it.
Yeah.
Like if you run that road out to the middle of nowhere and put that traffic signal in and build the frontage road, like we'll pay for 85-90% of that. And then we'll finance the rest for you at sub-market prices.
And then on the range, the IRRRB stepped in and did...
We'll do the gap financing.
The same
and,
thing,
and
yeah.
All you have to do is 30 years from now, on the pittance trickle of local government aid that you have left, maintain all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And go ahead and cut your parks and your libraries and all that other
stuff.
Well,
that's what's happening right now. And I feel we've probably spent too much time on this one question.
Well, we'll move on to the next one, but you can finish it up.
What we're seeing is towns like Hibbing, for example, I don't know about Chisholm, but I just read about it in Gilbert and other range towns. One of the fundamental ideas was we have a library, right? A public library that serves the community. And the hours on these libraries in these small towns I don't want to use a stereotype, but like, it's like banker's hours. You know, it's
show up at 9, leave at 3.
The Hibbing Library opens at 10. It's done at 5. It's not open on the weekends anymore. Working people.
Kids
have a difficult time going. I think they're open till 7 on some weeknights, but not Friday and other times where people might be able to use the service.
I think Grand Rapids Library closes Saturdays at noon.
Yeah, and Grand Rapids actually has some of the better hours in the Arrowhead system. So the point is, these towns are taking some of these fundamental equality things that we wanted out of local government aid and the Minnesota Miracle, and now we're watching those things kind of gradually slip away while the money, as Chuck points out, is generally spent on maintaining a vast amount of city transportation and infrastructure.
Unproductive
issues.
Stuff.
Roundabouts?
You can see how...
Those are very efficient.
Like this question and our conversation, I mean, the hope here with the candidates was these issues really are not conservative, liberal, like clear cut. There's no... I mean, you can't say like, you know, Medicare for all. I mean, what do you think of Medicare for all? I mean, there's a left position and a right position. What do you think of this local government aid conundrum? Right. And this fragile city conundrum in rural areas is not clearly left or clearly right, either in the analysis or in the answer to it.
The important thing to understand is that there are Republicans and Democrats who live in these cities, you know, even in conservative areas. And this is the other thing we wanted to get across in the debate was, you know, a city is not just one kind of person. There's all kinds of people. And you know what? We're looking at the library out the window. There are Republicans and Democrats that walk into that mm-hmm. library, no matter who we elect as a city or as a district. There are people of a wide variety of beliefs that walk in there. They're all members of our community. And how are we serving them? And that's the part of the rural discussion that I don't think comes out in these debates. It's always, you know, how will you appease these angry right-wingers who live in rural Minnesota? Well, there certainly are some, but it's not about that. It's about a much bigger question.
In our next segment, let's talk more about economy and then also some of the reasons why there's older people here and why younger people aren't coming to this area and kind of some of the issues with that. So how's that sound?
We can go there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're listening to Dig Deep on Northern Community Radio.